All right, guys, welcome back to the Weekside Podcast alongside Jenny Vrentis. I'm Connor Orr, and Jenny, we're in the midst of an officiating crisis. It's pretty scary here 6 weeks into the season.
Yeah, really bubbled over after Monday night's game between the Packers and the Lions. Those two phantom hands-to-the-face calls that directly impacted the outcome of the game.
I recently was talking with John Perry, who I think is doing a great job as ESPN's new rules analyst, sort of their Mike Pereira, and just how dejected he sounded, you know, in just saying that the officials aren't supposed to be the story. We're supposed to be invisible. And through 6 weeks, this has been the defining sort of groove of the season. We've been talking about missed calls, their inability or their non-desire to overturn pass interference calls. And it's just been strange, and it's led to some very significant sort of frustrating moments, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, and usually it's not uncommon for there to be a debate about officiating earlier in the season, but a lot of times it's centered on a single issue, right? Like last year, it was the body weight call, mm-hmm. and they could make an adjustment with how they called it. And then in the preseason last year, it was the lowering the head to initiate contact, which was a new rule. Now this year, obviously, the new pass interference being challengeable, that has caused issues. But in the case of Monday night, it was just missed call or an incorrect call, right? So I think this really brings into play the issue of the sky judge, which a lot of coaches pushed for at the spring meetings in Arizona instead of making pass interference reviewable. And that seems to be, I think, the best option because it would allow all of these things to sort of, it would allow there to be another check in place for a hands to the face call that's incorrectly called. You could have somebody upstairs who's looking at the same replays that all of America's looking at and just kind of nudge the crew that's on the rest of the crew that's on the field to pick up that flag.
Yeah, I think that would be the best option because I don't know. And you just pick up on the fact that not only are they missing some calls, right, but they're missing them twice and they're not overturning some of these calls. And I think that it's leading to really a snowball effect of a bad relationship on field, I think, with these guys who are supposed to be able to work with these players and coaches. But we've seen sort of a continuing sort of division or separation between the two. I can't count how many coaches now have had to restrain themselves from talking about officiating after the game. And while that is part of every season, I feel like that is more so this year than it has been in the past.
Yeah, then there's a lot of discussion about Al Riveron in the league office and his role. Is he the right person for that position? There's a lot of talk about how to fix this. Should officials err on the side of not throwing the flag? Should Bill Belichick's suggestion has always been to make everything challengeable, but we see the issue with the interference that the bar for overturning a call upon challenge is very high. And that's why going back to the sky judge, it makes sense because it's basically someone who's part of the crew and they can, you know, provide input as things are called rather than going through the challenge process, which may not yield an overturn of the bad calls we've seen so many times already this year. The pushback, I think, for the sky judge was that there weren't 16 qualified people to put in those roles, mm-hmm. because the thinking was they would essentially be in a position of power with the rest of the crew where they could influence and how calls were made, and they would sort of have this final say, this overlord of that. But the one thing I think the flaw in that argument is that they would be aided by video. So it's not like, yes, you want somebody experienced in that role, but they also have a crutch. They have the benefit of video. So they have another tool at their disposal that allows them to be in that position. So I think you would be able, it would be fine. I think it would be better than what we're seeing now. And it would really solve a lot of the gripes that we're seeing. Of course, you can say with any game, like one call isn't the end all be all, and there's all these other things that happen in the game. And so we have this tendency to lock in so much on a single flag and talk about it for a week. But that's what happened with the Saints.
Yeah.
And that's how we got into the position with pass interference. So I advocate for the sky judge, Connor.
It reminds me of when you go into, when I was in college, I used to be really obsessed with the Supreme Court. I got really into the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And when you head into Supreme Court season, there's always like those precedents, right, that are going to be sort of the bellwether for some of these big decisions that they make. And with pass interference, it's so interesting because you hear it almost the same way as people are talking about a big Supreme Court case, where it's like, well, the legal precedent is it has to be egregious or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And Mike Pereira said on, I think it was Thursday Night Football, that the Saints call is that officials are working off that. The Saints call is the precedent, which to me would be stunning if that's actually true, right? That mm-hmm. it has to be that bad mm-hmm. in order for you to actually overturn it. And then what's the point of installing this whole system anyway, right? Because mm-hmm. that's a once in a decade awful missed call, right?
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I think we were worried about this a little bit in the spring when we saw the back slapping with Sean Payton and Goodell after the spring meetings when the rule change was made. I think there was a little bit of a concern of like, well, what would the downstream effects be? How would this be in practice? And I think those concerns seem to ramp up more as the season neared, because I think at the time people were saying, you know what, we were able to do this, we pushed it through. But the reality was there was a lot of discord at the meeting, and there were a lot of head coaches that were meeting and trying to push the sky judge thing through. So will they go back to that? Will they say, hey, listen, in Arizona in March, we had a bunch of head coaches advocating for the sky judge. Maybe we go back to that. But really, I think that the root of the officiating crisis this year is exactly what you described, Connor. It's this overreaction to the one call. And you don't want to, you know, by saying the sky judge, maybe it sounds like we're overreacting too much, but that's a person who's a part of the crew. It's just changing the mechanism a little bit to incorporate technology. I think that's totally different.
Yeah. I mean, and you can relate it to anything in the sport, right? Talk to coaches who feel more comfortable calling plays in a booth, or, you know, talk to anybody who sometimes prefers that view of the field instead of the chaos on the field. And I think that you're just giving yourself more eyes. You're giving yourself another backstop, like you said. I don't know. I don't understand why it's this hard, because, you know, at least from my understanding, a lot of that competition committee, a lot of Sean Payton's whole speech was about, well, this is about the future and it's about protecting the integrity of the game for years to come. But instead, it's doing the complete opposite.
Mm-hmm. Agree, Connor. I agree.
You know what my favorite random Supreme Court fact is, by the way, that
yeah, I didn't know this about you. Go ahead.
That a lot of them like basketball. That they're a lot of them enjoy shooting hoops in their spare time.
Oh, right. We had a story about that at Sports Illustrated.
Yeah. Do you know what the court is called?
The Supreme Court.
Yeah. What else would you call it? Right?
What else?
What a segue to the news.
All right. Should I start with topic number one, Connor?
Let's do it. Let's make people forget about that.
All right. Yeah, moving on. After Dallas' third straight loss, this time to the previously winless Jets, the Cowboys have plummeted from Super Bowl favorite to NFC East also-ran. Sorry, I got a little tripped up with the also-ran there because there was no hyphen or is it one word? Also-ran. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, Cowboys owner Jerry Jones said that Jason Garrett would be very sought after if he was on the open market, throwing another powerful hand of support behind the middling coach. What do we make of the Dallas Cowboys now after 6 weeks, and should Garrett be in some trouble? I'm just going to go back to this quote. I think it's a little bit odd. If you're dating somebody, do you say like, well, if I broke up with Susie, she'd be very sought after on the open market. Jim would really be a popular guy if he was single. That seems weird to me. So therefore, I'm going to stay with Susie or Jim?
I have seen a version of that happened in high school. So I know that it exists. The tendency exists, right? To okay. not, you don't want to let go of something that might flourish elsewhere. I don't know. Maybe there's like a name for that or something like that. But yeah, this is a horrible sort of way to support your head coach there, right? And I don't think it's necessarily true, because we've seen the hiring trends of late, and while they may be largely misguided, owners want somebody that's going to deliver them either, you know, that world-beating defense or that fireworks show offense, and Jason Garrett can do neither of those things.
Yeah. We've been talking about his job status for several seasons now, and it seemed like in the past there were times when they would make a change. I think it all comes back to, you know, Amy Trask said this once when they were discussing you know, when Al Davis wanted to trade John Gruden, and the question that was asked then was, you know, and do what? So you have to have a good answer to that question. So if you fire Jason Garrett, then you have the and do what question. But I think there would be a lot of answers that you could make the argument for would be better. For instance, we always talk about Lincoln Riley, but yeah. I mean, that seems to be one dream candidate. But there are plenty of other candidates, I think, around the league that you could say, hey, listen, this might be a better option than at least they've given him so much time, right? I mean, it's not like you're giving up on him after a season or two, right? I mean, you sort of know what you're getting from Garrett. And I think there are plenty of candidates that you could think might do more.
I think it's one of those things where Garrett has sort of mastered the environment a little bit, right? Like, Dallas is just it's a parallel universe down there in Frisco. And I think that if you're the right kind of guy, if you're the Frisco guy, mm-hmm. then you just by naturally control the system, right? You control mm-hmm. there because of the way you act or the way you do things or the connections you have, whatever it is. And it's just weird. Like, there's like an unshakable nature to his foundation there that, you know, anytime speculation about his job security has arisen, it's been pretty quickly shot down.
Yeah. And I think he's handled it well. I just think if this team, the storyline this season, right, was the Cowboys are going to make some noise. We're re-signing all these core players. We have this team that's built to contend. And at 3-3, the season can go a lot of different ways. So it would be silly to say we know what's going to happen at this juncture in time. But if they don't end up as, what did someone say? You know, well, we could be 13-3. Well, okay, that's one option. You could also end up 8-8.
Yeah.
And I think if they end up at 8-8, I think it's reasonable to expect that a change would be made.
I think it's going to be, if they miss the playoffs, this is going to be a crazy offseason in Dallas, because it looks like Dak Prescott's going to wait. It may be till the end of the season to sign this new deal, so you have that to take care of. You have all the bills that you've just paid, Amari Cooper, Byron, you know, a lot of guys on this roster that need money, that are an integral part of this team, but you might be bringing in somebody new to evaluate them, and yeah, there's going to be a lot of moving parts. This might be a really active offseason.
Right, as opposed to what we thought going into this year was, well, we'll get all this business done, yep. and we'll keep this core together, and we'll just have another glory era of the Cowboys. It's a big shift a narrative. So
do you think it's coaching? Do you think that what they have there is reminiscent of, you know, because down there is like a picture of, you know, Amari and Zeke and Dak Prescott, like almost positioned like, you know, Aikman and Irvin and Emmett Smith. I mean, that's how they view them down there. But I wonder if that is just sort of the curse of their own environment, or do you think that they're good enough to build a team on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that trio is anywhere close in stature mm-hmm. to the original triplets. So I think there has been this effort to like elevate that group rhetorically speaking,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like let's say, okay, this is the what do they call them? Do they call them the new triplets, or what is it?
Well, I was wondering, that was my next question, because whenever I need a good word for something, I always text Jenny, and she always comes up with a great word. So what would be the, now I'm putting you on the spot. This is
yeah,
geez, totally
I was not prepared for this. Okay.
But like, what's a word for like the not as good triplets? You
yeah.
know, like the,
Yeah. Below replacement value. I don't know, Connor. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure what to make of this team. I mean, I think it's clear now that their first three wins of the season were not as good as we thought at the time. But you never know. They could pick up momentum.
You never know. They ran into a buzzsaw with Sam Darnold, though. He looked pretty good on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. Gang spleen, as we discussed on the Sunday or the Monday morning podcast, Connor.
I like that. All right, so news topic number two. After weeks of offensive impotence, the Minnesota Vikings have come alive, this time with a 4-touchdown performance by Kirk Cousins and a win over the Eagles. 3 of those touchdown passes went to one-time malcontent Stephon Diggs. So are the Vikings back, or was this a fortuitous matchup against a beleaguered Eagles secondary? I don't know. I thought that maybe Mike Zimmer was just getting his way at the beginning of the season mm-hmm. and establishing the run, and mm-hmm. then what happens when you establish the run is that other things open up for you, and that this is sort of a product of that. And, you know, Kirk Cousins may have just not been playing as well, and he's playing better. You know, can it be as simple as that, maybe?
Yeah, I think it can. I agree, Connor.
I think that they're, you know, I had them pegged as winning that division, and it's weird because I almost think of them separately. Like, everybody's talking about the Bears and the Packers and the Lions and what they've been doing this year, but I think Minnesota's just as good, if not better, than a lot of those teams if Kirk Cousins plays the way that he did last weekend.
Interesting. I would say at this point, I like the Packers and the Lions better than the Vikings.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm just not sure. They're just so up and down. I mean, we've seen this, you know, new passing offense on the Minnesota Vikings. I was trying to make a Lizzo lyric reference there that fell a little flat.
That was good.
Well, not really. Maybe I should have tried to sing it. You know, but that Eagles secondary is pretty terrible. And I think, like you said earlier, I think it's a little bit of both, right? Like, I don't think we're going to see this hot passing offense sustain the rest of the season. But I also don't think we'll see it fall flat as we feared perhaps earlier in the year.
Hot offense on the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Not bad, right? That's the song we're thinking of, right?
Yeah.
This is a pro Lizzo pod.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Is there any question?
I would actually like to see an anti Lizzo pod. It would probably be horrible.
I would not like to see that.
Definitely not. I think that, you know, that's. I wanted to include the Vikings in here for some reason, just because I feel like they get lost in the shuffle until November, but I don't know. I think they're going to be all right. That's all.
Yeah.
That's really all I got to say about that.
The NFC is interesting, I think, because there's like so many like
really
teams in the mix.
Yeah.
Whereas the you've got the Seahawks, you've got the 49ers, the Saints, the Packers, the Vikings, the Lions. The Rams have fallen off a little bit, but still, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that they're what, like the 13th best team or the 12th best team, Rams?
Is that where you had them in your power rankings? I didn't have them that low. Wow. Okay.
I also have not done my power rankings in about 2 weeks. I tried to set up a system, for those of you listening at home, the MMQB crew has a Word document, and then we have to fill out our power rankings before a certain time.
Okay, it's not a Word document, Connor.
It's an Excel.
It's a Google sheet.
A Google spreadsheet.
I mean, I'm supposed to be the one that's technologically incompetent here, and here you are saying we have a Word document.
I know. I'm starting to sound like my mom now. She calls everything cassette tapes. But yeah, it's a Google Sheet, and we all fill them out. And I tried to set up a system at the beginning of the year where instead of having to go through all the teams and rank them, I just wanted to say, give me the Jenny. I just take Jenny's and give it to me. So then that way we double down on whatever Jenny thinks, and then that way strengthen the average that we have against our peers. And because I just feel strongly that Jenny's typically right about everything, and so I feel good about your power rankings. They're always very sensible.
This is how we know you haven't done the power rankings, because if you had done them the last 2 weeks, you would realize how far my rankings have been off.
It's better than how I used to handle the power rankings at my old job, which is where I would try to prove a point, right? And there was five of us that did the power rankings, and then our editor would average out the teams at the end, and then we would put them in. And so if there's a team I really didn't like, say, I don't know, the Raiders, right? And the Raiders were 3-3. They were in the mix, but I just didn't like them. I would rank them 32nd to mess up the average.
Oh,
and
wow.
So they would plummet in the power rankings. And when you have four or five people only doing it, it can have a tangible effect on the rankings.
Yeah. I have the Raiders in the top 20.
Feels like I don't even know you.
Yeah. All right. Topic number three. The NFL's hot stove is warming up and the trade deadline is less than 2 weeks away. Do you anticipate a continuation of the deadline frenzy we've seen in recent years, or does it fizzle out? Wow. You wrote this in the morning huddle.
I did. Yeah, that's right.
Top trade targets.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are some teams, especially kind of piggybacking off your point about how good the NFC is, there's going to be some teams that have no choice but to kind of load up a little bit. I mean, this is going to be a tense, and there's going to be a lot of rubbernecking here at the top once everybody's trying to get in for playoffs. And if you're a team like Seattle, you're looking at your division and saying, we're in a good spot, but we're not even in first place. You know, we're not even the best team in our division right now. I mean, that's a team that could load up. Yeah, and then, the Eagles are another team with a GM that always likes to make moves here. I don't know. I think we're in line for another one of these really exciting trade deadlines, not only because there's a lot of these teams, but there's also a couple tankers that are left, and they haven't given up a lot of their assets yet. I'm speaking of teams that aren't the Miami Dolphins.
Right. We're still waiting to see where Jalen Ramsey lands.
Yeah.
Eagles are certainly in the market for a cornerback. There are some, who are some other teams that could benefit by adding one or two players?
I would say, you know, obviously the Seahawks, obviously the Eagles. Let me pull up my list here. But yeah, I mean, I think that there are a lot of teams. I mean, if you're in the, if you're in the AFC South, you know, if you're one of those teams, you try to add up, especially if you're the Texans, you've already gone through all the trouble, to try to, you know, add talent this year and already spent so much draft capital on this season. You know, that might be another interesting team. I don't know. I mean, I think that this is better for the game because coaches are no longer concerned about plugging and playing players anymore, right? I think you can do it a lot easier than you did in the past.
Yeah, and, you know, we have had a lot of players this year make their... I mean, the one deterrent, I think, to the trade deadline is we've already seen a ton of trades this year and in-season trades, but because we've seen players... right before the season trades, or in season, I mean, we already had a bunch of blockbusters, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Largely related to the Miami Dolphins. But there are other teams who are in positions where, like, if you're the Falcons, I mean... That's an interesting spot that they're in right now, right? Because going into the season, you think you're going to be a contender, and now you're 1-5. And the reality is, you probably need to collect some future assets and sort of start a remaking of this roster with all, because your core players are all aging.
Yeah. Can I get your thoughts? I'll read you my buyers and I'll read you my sellers.
Okay.
And then I'll see what you think here. My buyers are the Eagles. Talked about need a wide receiver and a cornerback. I think the Patriots, I think, are obviously, I mean, he's always, Belichick's always got something
always
going on.
Moving and shaking.
Always got eyes on somebody there. I put the Lions in there just because they've shown a willingness to make veteran trades. Mm-hmm. I do think it's an oddly complete roster, like if you look at it from top to bottom, but again, they're in a tough division. I think they're going to have to get some talent.
Yeah.
The Seahawks were another team that I put in there for the same reason. And here's my dark horse, which I think is going to be interesting. I think the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
They just need a playmaker.
Yeah, I agree. I think those are all good ones.
Yeah, and then I agree with you that the Falcons should sell, absolutely. You have Vic Beasley on the end of his rookie deal. You have guys like Austin Hooper, who's at the end of his rookie deal, who might be a nice trade asset. The Denver Broncos, even though you've won two straight, I think you need to kind of keep an eye on the future. You have guys like Chris Harris and Emmanuel Sanders. The Jets, even though that was a big win, right? I don't think you can ignore the fact that there's a reason you got rid of your GM, that there's probably guys you still don't like there.
Definitely. Leonard Williams would be an option, I think.
Yes.
Gase didn't shut the door on that on Monday when he was asked.
Yeah. I looked down really quickly and I thought I accidentally wrote Quinn and Williams, and I was like, that would have been problematic for a lot of reasons. I put the Bengals, and Zach Taylor said that they aren't going to trade AJ Green. I think that's crazy. I think that they could get great value for him. And then you have guys like Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins. I mean, they look like a gold mine for a contending team down the stretch, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those are all good suggestions, Connor.
And the Washington football team, you have Brandon Scherff, Trent Williams. I mean, a lot of teams would do crazy things for those players.
Crazy things for, we've seen so many line issues around the league. I don't think, as I mentioned before, I don't think the Dolphins have much left to trade. I mean, I think they're kind of depleted at this point.
This will segue into our next topic. Well,
yes.
But I was just down there because the Dolphins, as everyone knows, played Washington this weekend in what some fans had dubbed the toilet bowl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, according to NFL research, the worst game this deep into the season since 2004. So really underwhelming matchup there. But I did a lot of work in the tailgate, was talking to some fans, taking some temperatures. And there was a kid there who bought his best friend a Minkah Fitzpatrick jersey for his birthday a couple weeks ago and thought this is going to be the safest investment murky waters because they're tanking, but he's going to be part of the future. And now they're trying to figure out how to make it a Ryan Fitzpatrick jersey. But then I was like, I don't know if you want to do that either.
Yeah, that's not going to be much help. My favorite detail of the story was the people who had the WhatsApp group. What was the name of it?
The Loser Bowl.
The Loser Bowl, yeah. I'm just partial to like group chat names because I find that like it's really a place to express one's, you know, creativity, or really reflects a lot about the situation at hand. So I just loved that they... Now, why was it WhatsApp, though? I mean, were they like...
So it's an international group.
Oh,
so
right.
We had
okay.
A lot of friends from all over. Okay. So okay. Anyway, so topic four, the Miami Dolphins remain winless this past weekend in an epic 17-16 loss to Washington at Hard Rock Stadium. There was a failed last-second two-point conversion attempt, and it seems like you know, that was their last good chance of logging a win for this season, and that slipped away. So I went down there to write about it for SI.com, and, you know, it's interesting because I think that there are fans that here there that understand what is going on, and then there are fans that I think have a legitimate gripe in that if you're going to spend money and you're going to be a season ticket holder, not that a team should have to tip their hand to you at all, but they should offer some sort of comparable pricing for a season that they're very obviously losing every game on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's an interesting because they are probably... For the team, this is probably a financially successful season, as weird as that is to say.
Yes.
Because they are saving so much on the payroll. They are by far the bottom of the league in cash payroll. And they're still, the ticket revenues are the same. So, or, you know.
Yeah.
I think they're making a lot of money on this season.
I do too. You know, I had like a very weird revelation when I was down there that like the football doesn't matter. And I don't think it's mattered for a long time. Like, I think the NFL games largely are just a thing to do, right?
Right.
You know, it's a place to go and grill meat at 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, there's just a lot of weird things that you can't do that are totally socially acceptable at NFL games, right? Like, you can't chug a bunch of airplane bottles of Fireball and scream anywhere. You can, but it's not, you know, encouraged. I just think, you know, I was watching, I bought a ticket and I actually just watched the game from a fan's perspective, and you know, they're just, nobody's paying attention, you know. I think the only time that I saw anyone visibly dialed in was probably the last play of the game, you know?
yeah even if, you know, the teams are bad or even whatever the direction of the season, there are people who going, you know, tailgating has been a tradition that they've had for decades, right? So when I was there, I went a few weeks ago, and it was the similar thing. Like, there was a group that I met, and there were six cars in a row, and they all come together, and when they reconfigured the stadium, they all got their seats together, and she has this big table with bobbleheads of Miami Dolphins players, none of whom are still there, which speaks to, like, the, you know, the amount of roster churning that's been. But they just go because, like, it's still fun to go and still fun to be with their friends, and it's like their activity. It's like part of their routine. So yeah, but to answer your other question, I do think they're barreling to 0-16.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to be 0-16, but it's also that roster is just, I mean, the fact that they, I think, what, they scored in the second half for like the first time all season, that speaks to the talent deficiency, because you can, in the first half, you can sort of keep up with the other team. You know, they had that first half against the Cowboys where they were kind of in the mix. You can scheme some things up. You can play on, you know, intensity and, you know, frustration, and all those things can kind of feed how you play to sort of somewhat keep pace with the other team. But I think in the second half is really when you see the talent deficiency show up, when players are tired and when, you know, you're not off of your opening script anymore and the other team's making adjustments and you just don't have the players to keep up with their players. It really shows up in the second half, which is why I thought that stat was especially telling.
Yeah. It was aesthetically one of the grossest football games that I've seen in a long time. Just a lot of Adrian Peterson runs up the middle and then a lot of just, you know, quick passes to the outside that don't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing Ryan Fitzpatrick was fun. They put him in, at least, you know?
That was a little bit of a jolt.
Energized the crowd, I would say.
Right.
Generally, though, like a nice place to watch the game. I mean, I like the open airiness of the stadium.
The canopies have been have really helped, yeah. The canopies they added to add more shade. So really, it's a dress rehearsal for the Super Bowl. They're testing all the protocols. They're testing, you know, making sure the stadium's prepared for February.
It's going to be a fun Super Bowl.
Yeah?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I like Miami.
Yeah, you know.
I'm not a Miami guy, you know, clearly, he says in a sweatshirt.
You can visit. You've got that bartender, though, at the hotel.
Yes.
On
Key West.
No, not Key West.
Key Biscayne.
Key Biscayne.
Yeah.
Yes.
My guy.
Your guy. You can visit him during Super Bowl week.
We talked about this a little bit on the MMQB podcast, but I have the favorite bartender in the world that bartends at the Ritz-Carlton in Key Biscayne, and he has like a dance, and he has a whole routine built around that song, 21st of September. Do you remember? I forget who said Earth, Wind, and Fire. And, you know, they had the NFL winter meetings there a couple weeks ago. And I told Albert Breer, who was down there, I said, you got to go find this guy. It's the best experience of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't do it.
Missed opportunity.
I mean, I would go.
Or we'll make up for it in February.
Yes, I will. There's no doubt about that.
All right. The last topic. The Los Angeles Rams are 3-3 and sitting in third place after yet another loss this past weekend to the streaking 49ers. With increasing evidence that there is a defensive blueprint to slow down Sean McVay's offense, are we seeing the demise of the Rams' wunderkind head coach and his light speed offense?
Am I topics getting a little wordy?
No. I just was concerned I mispronounced.
No, that was perfect.
Wunderkind? Wunderkind?
I don't know. I use it so much. And
just
then
got a little nervous that I got that pronunciation wrong.
That's like, I really embarrassed myself in front of a mutual friend of ours recently when I thought that apropos was pronounced phonetically. And so I said like a propes of nothing.
Connor.
The person who I did this in front of will definitely get that reference. So props to that person because I know you're listening.
I gotta be better
is all I'm trying to say with my language. Gotta be better. I don't know. What do you think? The Rams, I saw that there was like somebody who posted four pictures from four different games, the last four games against the Rams, last four opponents, mm-hmm. everybody running that 6-1 defense that we saw the Patriots running in the Super Bowl. I don't know. You can call it different variations, whatever you want to call it, but it's weird that it has slowed them down a little bit mm-hmm. and that they haven't made the counter adjustment to that, right?
Right. I think a big issue is the offensive line mm-hmm. for both teams in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It seems like it doesn't allow them to do anything on offense that they want to do. But you're right. I mean, it's strange that there's not a tactical adjustment to the way that defenses have been slowing them down, especially given that there was an offseason to like learn from that Super Bowl and obsess over the tape, which of course they did. So it's weird that there's no counter move, but I think the offensive line, the fact that Goff had a lot of things going well around him last year and doesn't seem to this year, and there's, you know, injuries. There's been a lot of different factors, but really the sheen is off. What's the
sheen? Yeah,
the sheen,
I like that.
Is off the
sheen is off the.
I don't know. The bloom is off the rose. I'm not sure. There's some other sheen analogy. Our listeners are really going to think that we're dolts this week, Connor.
Well, apropos of nothing, apropos of nothing. I think it's, you're right. I mean, anyone who faces that 49ers defense is going to look bad and confused up front.
It was a total mismatch.
But yeah, it was. Right. It looked like they were in different worlds, mm-hmm. right? You know, and Jared Goff had no time to do anything. But I think it's interesting that, you know, this will be a real challenge. I think of how we view Sean McVay and how our opinions of him might change from year to year. Because if you're the Rams, right, so much of the decisions that you've made have been on the faith that this guy can fix any of your problems and or handle any of your situations, right?
Mm-hmm. And rewarding Goff with a contract because
yeah.
he can be a good quarterback under McVay. And now you're in a situation where you're tied to Goff and you can't make any kind of change in the near future. And it's not working right now.
Do you think that there's, are you close to a panic button right now? Or do you think that it's one of those things where he hasn't even made his counter move yet? So let's see what happens when he comes up with something different.
I am close to a panic button.
Wow.
I am.
Wow. Interesting. Very interesting.
What about you?
I don't know. Now that you said it, I'm like scared that I'm not as close to the panic button as you.
Oh.
You know?
I don't know. I feel like I'm a person that panics. So I think both teams in Los Angeles, I think, you know, are at a little bit of a crisis here. But with I say the panic button for the Rams because that division
is very
it's
good.
It's really good. And you know, they're in third place.
Think about this, by the way. This is sort of going branching off our Dolphins topic, and I didn't write this down, but I do think it's interesting to at least mention is, think about if the Rams don't have a great season this year, and we talked about Miami still being able to fill about 70% of that stadium. What are them and the Chargers going to do with like a 115,000 seat stadium with a team that no one wants to go see? I mean, that could be not good. It's going to be a huge stadium.
Yes, it'll be. Well, I guess the question for the Chargers games will be like, are there enough opposing fans to fill the stadium? Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a joke, but I mean, it's really a bad situation.
It is.
I mean, the NFL really wanted them to stay in San Diego. I was stunned. That move stunned me. And we're seeing now that like it should never have happened that way. But yeah, they're both the new stadium opening was so exciting because both teams were really good last year.
Yeah.
And now we have this season. And again, we're only 6 weeks in, so we don't know where they're going to end up. And we perhaps the panic button is a little extreme because both of these are very good coaches. But I just feel like there's some flaws that are going to be difficult to overcome even with good coaching.
Yeah. No, it's going to be really interesting. No good segue into what we're going to do next. I mean, I have had a bad run of Oracle predictions. So at the end of every episode, we have these two segments where the first of which is called the Oracle, and I like to predict something that I think is going to happen. I was way ahead of myself in terms of my own opinion of my ability to predict the future before we started this podcast. And then when I started doing it regularly, I realized how bad I was at it.
No, I think you're actually very good at it. I think it's just, you know, it's a small sample size, Connor.
I guess the only pending ones that I can still nail. Freddie Kitchens before Thanksgiving is going to relinquish play calling duties. I think that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think I feel pretty good about that one. And that Saquon Barkley is going to hold out before the end of his rookie deal. I think that I feel pretty good about that. I said next year, but it might be the year after that. I don't even think he can legally hold out next year.
Right, yeah.
So there was some problematic areas
there. I think
there's
the phrasing, but your general intention was a good one.
I need to hire you as my attorney. So I'm going to go with a safe one. You called out my safeness before when I hit you with this. And it's non-football because, I don't know, I just need to take a break from football predictions for a minute. But tonight we have another Democratic presidential debate, and I'm not dipping into
Tuesday night. So we're recording this.
So we're recording this on Tuesday. Right. Yeah. So by the time that you will, this will hit your inbox on
you'll
Wednesday.
Know. This
you'll
is
know.
Like, this is instant. This is like instant.
Come on.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. I just got really fired up about this. So we're not, for anybody that's, you know, we're not telling you who you should vote for or anything like that. You don't have to turn it off. I'm just making a prediction on what I think is going to happen in the debate. I think tonight, Tuesday, there's going to be that crystallizing debate moment. I think we're going to have the moment tonight, you know.
Okay.
And, you know, I think it's different than the moment when it's down to two, right, or down to three. But I think tonight we are going to have the crystallizing, this is the man or woman who's going to lead our country or at least be nominated to challenge the other party to lead our country. I think that tonight we're going to get the moment. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm feeling it. Yeah.
Okay.
The
so just,
moment.
Just for the record here, you have really... sauced up the prediction a little bit. Earlier today, you were like, I'm going to say that we're going to have a moment at the at the debate tonight. And I was like, but isn't there always a moment?
There's always a moment.
Right.
Right.
Okay. That's why I said it was safe. But you're saying the moment.
I think tonight might be the moment.
Okay.
You know?
That is a different prediction.
It
you're
might
a
be
a little bit more out on a limb.
Yeah. I think it's going to be like the rose ceremony, like moment. Like, I think we're going to get it. We're going to find out who our bachelor or bachelorette is going to be.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm very excited. I'm not going to watch it, but I haven't watched any of them.
Okay.
But
I'm not sure. Maybe I'll watch a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm feeling it.
All right.
And I think you just have to go with it sometimes, right?
Speaking of out on a limb, the Brentis consensus is a little out on a limb this week as well, Connor. So recently I started seeing a therapist. She's great. You know, I have a lot of anxiety, some depression. You know, I thought it was time to address some of these things. And you know, we've been working on thought records and what is a thought? She says a lot, you know, why does it have hold on you? It's just this thing, you know? So a lot of these things that she's talked about with me are very helpful, but we talk about work a lot, my job. Today, we were discussing why I went into sports journalism, and she referenced something that her father always told her. Am I violating patient? I mean, no, I don't think so.
I think it's you're able to do that.
I'm the patient.
Had the therapist been on the Weak Side podcast, that would have been very troubling.
Okay, but yeah. I'm sure she's not listening anyway. Okay. Anyways, she sent me this article from the 1955 Sports Illustrated. So she found it in the vault. And it was basically about what sports is. And yeah. In checking the date here, Connor, I have scrolled well past the
the passage.
Okay, here we go. I found it again. Okay. So it's talking about man versus amoeba. Now, let me just say that we're using man as like humankind here. And this is 1955. So the language is a little sexist.
Right.
So just every time I say man, insert woman as an option. Maybe I should just do that. Anyways, okay. A sport is a design for living in an artificial environment hedged with self-imposed disciplines and filled with the fear of failure and the hope of success. Individual man or woman can make a world of his or her own in the shape of a baseball diamond, a football field, a tennis court, or a golf course. There, he or she observes the special rules of artificial life and death. He or she lives to glory if he breaks par, and then, refreshed with intimations of immortality, returns to his or her desk and the problems of the real world, purged for a little while of doubt and fear, pleasantly aware that there are areas where he or she is master of his or her fate and captain of his or her soul. I kind of liked that, Connor.
The one counter to that would be when I played adult softball and there was like a day where I dropped like three balls in the outfield, then you return to your desk and you think, I'm worse than ever. Like, I can't even catch a softball in a recreational league. But I thought it was very beautifully written.
So, really, this is, it only applies
to athletes. Good athletes.
Who can succeed.
So half of the Weak Side podcast.
No, like maybe 0% of the Weak Side podcast. All right. On that note, the MMQB Weak Side podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects. Mark Moravik is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.